Hey guys, welcome to the Anchored Hope Podcast. I'm Pastor Mike, the lead pastor of Anchored Hope Church, and I hope that while you're listening today to our podcast, you can join us on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. at 211 Boone Street. We'd love to have you. We hope that this message is encouraging to you, and we hope that you can also join us at our location at 211 Boone Street. Also, check out our Facebook page and our website, www.anchoredhope.church.
Last week, we began a new series called Lead Well, and I asked you guys a question. How many of you are leaders? So I'm going to ask it again. How many of you are leaders by show of hands? Okay, if you weren't here last week, the answer is everybody. Everybody is a leader. Whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, everybody is a leader because everybody has eyes on them. Somebody is watching you, listening to you, or has the potential to follow you. Whether you're a business owner, whether you're just an employee, you still have the ability to influence people around you. It's not about title. It's not about position. Even parents, you're leading your family. You're leading your marriages. If you're a coach, if you're a teacher, if you're on any type of team or amongst a group of people, everybody can lead, and everybody is a leader. Everyone can influence somebody, but we have to be careful. What we talked about last week is you have to be careful because there's a big difference between influencing somebody and manipulating somebody. What we talked about the difference is this. Manipulation is when we want something from people, and influence is when we want something for people. There's a big difference. Manipulators, they come in with an agenda. They come in with something that they want that's really for themselves. But influencers, that's the people that God is calling us to be. Influencers come in with a vision that's for everyone, and influencers want for people. And we talked about Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived. The reason he was the wisest man who ever lived is because God asked him when he got his title, what is it that you want? And he said, I want to do what's best for your people, and I have no clue what I'm doing. And so God gave him the wisdom that he needed to lead God's people. And that's where you are. You're in this spot where you're a leader, whether you like it or not, whether you know it or not, everyone can influence somebody. But last week, I left you hanging. I said there was one thing that every leader must start to do today in order to lead well. But I didn't tell you what that thing was because I wanted you to come back next week. See what I did there? But the one thing that every leader must start doing now in order to lead well is every leader who wants to lead well must lead themselves. It starts with you. Before you can lead others, you must lead yourself. Before you can manage a group of people, you have to learn to manage yourself. Before you can be responsible for a group of people, you've got to learn to be responsible for yourself. It all starts with you. And this seems to be where every leader slips up. And this is, I think, so important, so relevant today for where our culture is. Where leaders start to slip up, where we see the stories on CNN or Fox News or whatever it is you may watch, where we see where a leader starts to go wrong is when a leader forgets that before they can lead others, they have to lead themselves. I have to start with me. It starts with not what I preach, but what I practice. It doesn't start with just what I tell other people we value. If what I say is valuable to our company or our group of people or our family, but I don't hold that value to be important myself, then it's all for nothing. Before I can do any of that, it all has to start with me. And when we don't do that, it hurts our ability to lead. Again, to lead our teams, to lead our classrooms, to lead our families, to lead our marriage, to lead our businesses. It starts with me. Enron is a great example. Enron was the largest energy company in the world in the year 2000. 22,000 employees, $101 billion in revenue. And did you know that in a shareholders meeting, shortly before everything hit the fan, they shared their four values as a company with everybody, with the entire world? And do you know what Enron in 2000, their four values were? It was communication, respect, integrity, and excellence. And if you're my age or older, you know what happened with Enron. Enron in 2001, it was found out that the reason they were so successful and the reason they were so rich is because they had planned account fraud going on the entire time. And at the time, they ended up having to file the largest Chapter 11 bankruptcy in history. There have only been two companies since then who have beat their record of Chapter 11 bankruptcy. What in the world went wrong with Enron? I mean, their values, what they said they represented, were communication, integrity, excellence, respect. Where did it go wrong? It happened with one leader. At some point in time, one leader hit the first domino and decided not to lead themselves first. Decided that integrity wasn't important, that excellence wasn't important, that communication wasn't important, that you know what, those are just things written on a piece of paper, but I've got something that I want. And the manipulation began and it spread throughout the entire company. Starts with one leader who forgets to lead themselves well. And those leaders, they were accused of lying, of manipulating, of stealing, and a whole lot more. Here's the thing that we all have to know. As we are leaders, we are leading others. And we have to lead ourselves. If you don't do it, there's something on the screen that's supposed to be there. There you go. If you don't do it, they'll never aspire to do it. If you do it, they'll feel like they have permission to do it too. Parents, I need to tell you, you've got to lead well. Where you lead yourself is where your family will follow. And if you don't do it, they'll never aspire to do it. If you do it, they'll feel like they have permission to do it. I've heard it said before, and I think it was in the church world, and I can't remember who said it to me, but I believe it's true in every culture and every world, is that every organization, every group of people, they take on the DNA, the culture of their leader. That pretty soon, every church, they begin to take on the DNA, the culture of their pastor. Every business, they began to take on the DNA and the culture of their boss. Every family, whoever the head of that family may be, the kids, they will follow and they will take on the DNA and the culture of their family. And what you do, they will do. And what you don't do, they'll never aspire to do. In your family context, what you do, your habits, what you eat, how you take care of your body, your health, how you handle anxiety, how you handle financial strain, how you handle, you know, things with other family members or coworkers, your family, your kids, they are watching that. And in those moments, how you lead yourself is how you are leading your family. And you are creating, almost weaving those things into your family roots, into who your kids, even maybe who your great-grandkids will become. Business leaders, what you do, the culture that you create, the DNA of who you are, how you lead yourselves, that will be passed on among your employees. If you are a sarcastic leader, expect to have a culture of a lot of sassy, sarcastic people. If you're somebody who procrastinates, then guess what? You're going to have a group of procrastinators on hand. If you tell people, if you preach to people that on time, they need to be here at 8 o'clock, but you show up as a leader at 8:08, then guess what everybody else is going to do? They're clocking in at 8:10. And you can't understand what in the world is going on. It's because you didn't lead yourself first. And others are following your lead. Teachers in the classroom. Coaches on the football field. You chew out a ref. You curse out a ref. You yell at a ref. Guess what? All your little team members are going to be watching you coach. And guess what they're going to do? They're going to blame the ref too. How you handle the situation is how they are going to handle the situation. How you lead affects we. That's the truth. How you lead you affects we. Affects everybody else whose eyes are on you, who are listening to you. And if you can't lead yourself right, then you can't lead right. We all have to be aware of what we're doing and how we're leading ourselves first before we can lead anybody. So how do we do that? How do we lead ourselves well so that we can lead our businesses well, lead our community well, lead our families well, lead our classrooms well, lead our teams well? How do we lead ourselves first? Well, I think a great thing that we can take away comes from the Apostle Paul. You know, the Apostle Paul was the biggest persecutor of the Christian church. And then he had this life-changing, transformative moment with Jesus on the road to Damascus. And in that, all of a sudden, he went from the biggest persecutor of the church, that in that one moment, he changed and became the biggest supporter of the church, became the godfather, really, of the first generation church. He planted churches, and he went around leading so many different people, and Paul always led himself first. But there was one leader in particular that we see that he really poured himself into. Like, this was his young Padawan. This was his right-hand man. This was his apprentice. And that was a little boy by the name of Timothy. Timothy was a very young man. And Paul ran on into him on his second, he kept doing these little tours around the area. And in his second tour, he came across Timothy's hometown of Lystra. And in Lystra, Paul meets Timothy, and he immediately takes Timothy and puts him under his wing. He's like, Timothy, this is you, right here, underneath my wing, buddy. And I'm going to teach you how to be a little me. And so he begins to lead himself and then lead Timothy in order that Timothy can lead others. And he assigns Timothy one of his most best but difficult churches there was, the Church of Ephesus. The Church of Ephesus is the church that Paul writes to in his letters to Ephesians that you know about in the New Testament. And so we have two letters that Paul writes to Timothy, 1st and 2nd Timothy. And in these letters, Paul starts to give Timothy the training that he needs to make other leaders. The church at Ephesus needed leaders. But Paul was very specific. We don't just need leaders. We need good leaders that can lead themselves first. And so he gives us this great bit of information that's even valuable to us today. So in 1 Timothy, this is what Paul says to Timothy. He says, this is a trustworthy saying, meaning I feel like this is pretty good. I think I'm going to start my sermons off that way from now on. This is pretty good, guys. I feel like this is good. You should take this away with you. A trustworthy saying. If somebody aspires to be a leader, he or she, I actually edited that. In case you guys go read that, I just thought, you know, we should include a she in there because that's the type of leader I am. So he or she, not just the he's, but he or she, if they desire an honorable position. So a leader must be a person whose life is above reproach. So Paul says to Timothy, here's what every leader needs to understand. This position of being a leader, it's an honorable position. This is a big deal. Being a parent isn't something you should take lightly. Being a business owner, being an apartment head, being over a group of people, being a teacher, being a coach, do not take it lightly. This is big because people are going to listen to you. People are going to follow you. The words that you say will be remembered for a long time. Trust me, I am scarred by many teachers all the way back to the first grade. This stuff's going to be remembered. It's going to be embedded into people, and it's going to have a lifelong impact. So be careful because this is an honorable position. And he says, so a leader must be a person whose life is above reproach. I think this could best be summed up in this way, is that Paul is first saying, you have to lead your character first. First, lead your character. A leader must lead their character. You know, so many times in today's culture, as we watch the news, as we see the stories, what do we see? We find out that a leader, we find out that somebody who's in a high position, that has a lot of influence over people, it turns out they're kind of a bad guy or a bad girl or a bad person. All these stories that we see of people all of a sudden being found out that they're liars, that they're manipulators. You know, pastors, government officials, police officers. I mean, why in the world right now do we just kind of hate white men in general right now? It's because we have seen so many stories and found out that so many people have taken a position of influence and they've used it to hurt people, to manipulate people. And it turns out that these people that we thought were of good character are actually of very poor character. I mean, I can speak from my context specifically before I speak of anybody else's. There have been far too many pastors who were in an honorable position, who were in a place of being a shepherd over a flock. And they used their position, they used their power, they used their place of influence to actually hurt other people. People, pastors and people who sexually assaulted young children or other people, or even who took their position of power and used it to gain advantage and use people, and people ended up getting burnt out and being hurt and just kind of leaving them in the past. Actually, that might be why some of you are here today, because as our vision statement says, we want to be a church for people who don't like church. But you may not have liked church because there was a pastor in your past or a priest or whatever it may be, or even a board member or somebody who burned you, who hurt you, who took advantage of you, who you felt like wasn't of good character that a pastor should be. And so here you are today, and you're even maybe a little bit, you know, cautious around me or even cautious about getting involved in the church because you've been burned in the past. Because somebody in your past used their position, used their place of influence, and they weren't of good character. We have to lead ourselves, and we have to lead our character. We can't let our decisions and our ability to lead ourselves undermine so many other leaders. Something that I do in order to lead my character is I ask myself two questions. What do I want to be known for? You know, that's really what character is, right? Character is your characteristic traits of what you're known for and who you are. And we all have characteristics that we think should come to mind when we think about our president, when we think about our government officials, when we think about police officers or firefighters or teachers or coaches or even pastors. And I all the time think about, as a pastor, when people are looking at my character, when they're kind of judging me and kind of, you know, deciding on who I am, what is it that I want to be known for? And then the second question I always ask myself, is there anything I'm currently doing that's endangering that? Because that's really where a lot of people go wrong. When they don't lead their character, we find out that they actually have bad characteristics, and that's where the whole thing kind of gets blown up. So what do I want to be known for? And is there anything I'm currently doing now, publicly or privately, that could possibly be found out and could endanger that? We have to choose to first lead our character. Asking ourselves these questions as an employee, as a business leader, as a police officer, as a coach, as a teacher, what do I want to be known for? What do I want people, what do I want to come to their mind whenever they think of a cop, when they think of a pastor, when they think of a school teacher, when they think of a football coach? What do I want to come to mind? Is there anything I'm currently doing now that could endanger that? We have to lead our character first, because too many leaders today are being exposed. Thank God, actually, it's so easy today that we can find these things out, because it's time for a change. It's time for leaders to lead their character. But then Paul even continues. Paul goes on to Timothy, and he says that. He says he must exercise self-control, live wisely, and they must have a good reputation. This is a lot here, but I think that the best way to sum up these three things is, a leader must lead their temperament. If you're going to lead well, you must lead yourself, and you must lead your temperament. If you look at the things that Paul talked about, he said he's got to exercise self-control, got to be a wise person, got to have a good reputation. When people disagree, when things don't go as planned, how is it that you respond as a leader? We all know what's going to happen, right? Strife is life. Anytime we're involved in a group of people and choices important, big choices have to be made, there are going to be times where somebody doesn't get it right, or when somebody forgets something, or something goes wrong, or we have disagreements about what should be done. As a leader, in those moments, you have to lead yourself. You have to lead how you respond to those people. You have to choose to be wise in the moment where things are stirred up, when things are on high alert, when everybody's emotions and temperatures are way above what they normally are. You've got to do that, because as a leader, you need to keep a good reputation. Because how you lead through those moments, that's what is going to be talked about. I mean, we never ask questions of a leader whenever we're looking at possibly, you know, going to a new job or possibly being in a group with somebody else, or we're going to their classroom, or we're going to be on their football team. We never go, well, how are they when things are going well? Nobody ever asks that question. If any question, people go, well, how are they when stuff hits the fan? When things are bad, when there's a disagreement, when there's conflict in the workplace, how do they, as a leader, handle it? Even in marriage, nobody cares about how you are as a husband or a wife, as a parent, when things are going well. What matters to people most is when things go bad, because we know they will, when things are stressful, because we know they will get there, how are they? What are they like? How are they going to lead our family? How are they going to parent our kids? Because those moments are the moments that matter. And so as leaders, we have to choose in that moment to lead our temperament. We have to be leaders who choose to respond wisely, who don't snap back at people, who don't act off of emotion, but who lead wisely in order to keep that good reputation so that we can continue to be leaders that people want to follow. A great piece of advice that I was given by somebody that I've still held to this day, and when I don't do it, I want to kick myself in the butt because I should always do this. But anytime there's a moment or there's a decision or something occurs that kind of raises your emotions, that all of a sudden things start to go badly and the emotions start to raise, and you as a leader, you have to respond. It was said to me once, the advice that was given to me is always wait 24 hours before you respond to a high stressful, highly emotional decision. You know, in those moments where somebody does something wrong and you want to pick up the phone and you want to be like, listen, what happened? What is going on? What are you thinking? Are you insane? Don't do that. They said, wait 24 hours. Allow yourself time for the temperature to come down. Allow yourself time for the emotions to come down so that you can live wisely in that moment, so that you can give wise advice, so that whenever you speak, even though you may say the right thing, how you say it so very matters. So give yourself that time for your emotion to not speak through what you actually want to say. You've got to take that time. I mean, this even applies to our marriages. You may have heard the old proverb, right? Don't go to bed angry. I've thrown that out. That's terrible advice in my family, okay? I wrote my own proverb. Go to bed angry before you say something stupid, you moron, okay? That's the proverb that I say to myself. Because here's the truth. This is, I just know me. If I make the statement, we're not going to bed angry, we're not going to bed, nobody's sleeping until we figure this out, well, get ready for a battle royal. And Kate is going to win. That's what's going to happen. So I've written myself a new proverb. If you want to say something wise, if you want to keep a good reputation, if you want to not sleep on the couch for the next couple days, then you need to just stop. You need to let the emotion come down. You need to choose to live wisely, to respond wisely, to exercise self-control, and you just need to wait. And so that's what we do in our family. I don't know what works in your family, but that's what we do, because I need that time. If I'm going to be a good leader, if I'm going to lead my family well, I've got to exercise self-control, and I've got to give myself time for the temperature to come down, for the emotions to come down, so that I can live, respond wisely, and keep my good reputation. How you lead your temperament will create your reputation. Then Paul goes on and he says this. He says he must not be a heavy drinker or be violent. He must be gentle, not quarrelsome, and not love money. Now again, a lot to unpack here, but I believe that this could be summed up in this. You must lead your habits. I mean, in that moment, Paul talks about drinking, he talks about money, he talks about all these different things, fighting with people, he needs to be a gentle person. I think he's really talking about habits that we have, because the habits that we have, the vices that we allow in our life, affect the way that we lead. And so we need to lead ourselves in good habits. A good leader must lead their habits well. I worked for a pastor who had terrible habits. And I've only worked for a few, so you could probably do a process of elimination, and the one is not my dad. So there was a pastor I worked for, and he was terrible. He was awful. He had so many terrible habits in his life. He had this habit in his life where he was a workaholic and he could not turn it off. He marveled in the fact every week that he worked 60 to 70 hours, and I never got it. But he would work so much and he was not able to turn it off, to the point where he had to take 2 to 3 sleeping pills every night just to fall asleep because he couldn't turn the church off. And he would wake up at 3 a.m. He would sleep 3 hours. Wake up at 3 a.m. and come to the office and begin to work. And he would have these moments where he would get so tired, he would come into my office that was next door and say, "Michael, I need to take a nap. I'm going to lay down on my couch and sleep. In an hour, would you come in and wake me up?" Do you know how awkward and weird that is? To go into your boss's office and the lights are out and to wake him? I mean, just somebody call, you know, somebody. This, nothing about this is a recipe for anything good. And so I would have to go on there and wake up my boss from his nap. So weird, you're right? And he was so unhealthy in his habits of how he took care of himself. He was so unhealthy that he would literally get to the point where his doctor would tell him, "You need to leave town and regain balance in your life. You need to literally leave town and get away from the church because you cannot turn it off." And he would suddenly come in my office with no warning and say, "I saw my doctor today. He told me I need to walk away. I will be gone for the next 3 to 4 weeks. The church is yours." I'm 19 to 21 during this season of my life. Never hand a 19-year-old boy a 400 in attendance church. It never goes well. But he did this at least 3 times, about every 9 months in the 2.5 years that I was there. And he would just leave because he had such poor habits. He could not lead himself. He did not have good habits. And it affected his ability to lead his family and to lead our church. How you lead yourself, what habits you have in your life are so very important. They will affect your ability to lead other people. We need to think about the habits that we have. And we need to think about not only the habits that we have that are harmful, but maybe there are some habits that we don't have that we need to add to our utility belt. There are some good habits out there. You know, good leaders, the good leaders that I follow and I listen to and I read about, they are not good leaders by accident. Good leaders are leaders who have good habits that they are disciplined in. And they take those habits and they throw out the bad ones and they replace them with new ones in their utility belt. And they use those habits to lead themselves well so that they can lead others well. This is really in the last couple years where podcasts have come in super handy for me. I'm going to give you just 4 of the ones that I listen to all the time. They're going to be in a list here. The Craig Rochelle Leadership Podcast. It's a pastor podcast, but it's specifically for leaders. It's not just for pastors. The Craig Rochelle Podcast, Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast. Again, another pastor, but he does not just speak directly to pastors. He speaks to all types of different leaders. Chasing Excellence. This is actually a CrossFit podcast. Ben Bergeron of CrossFit Boston. He is a CrossFit coach, and he does one called Chasing Excellence, and he does not talk about CrossFit as much as he just talks about life. He has a great one that I would recommend to you that says 10 Things to Stop Doing Today, and it's great material on habits that he and his family have. Actually, one of them I just listened to this week, he talked about the habits that his family has, and he talked about that they have a habit of every month they come up with a family goal that they want to achieve, and then they practice that during that month. And so I was listening to this podcast, and then all the kids and the family and I were in the car, and I said, "I listened to this on this podcast. I think this would be a great habit for us to have. I want us to every month think of a family goal and how we're going to achieve it and stick with it." And within like 2 minutes, I was asking the family, and Olivia, my 4-year-old, says, "I know one. Every night we should spend time cleaning our rooms." And really, that's more for her and her mother than me and Brayden. But I said, "That's a great one. So every night in November, we're going to spend 30 minutes every night before we go to bed cleaning the house." That's great, right? That's something our family's doing that we're choosing to lead ourselves in to lead each other well in. But that's Chasing Excellence. And then the Jordan Harbinger Show, another great podcast that I listen to that has great tips on habits and how to lead yourself well. You need to think about your habits. And you need to think about some of the habits that you may have that may actually be hurting your ability to lead other people. Which ones do you need to replace with good habits? And you need to think about good habits that you could take on and discipline yourself in so you can lead yourself well, so you can lead others well. The last one is this that Paul says. We're going to wrap up with this. He must manage his own family well, having children who respect and obey him. For if a man cannot manage his own household, how can he take care of God's church? This is so very important. A leader must lead their family. You must lead your family. I'm glad Paul concludes with this because this is what he's saying. Your family comes first, which is something that so many leaders need to hear. But before your business, before your church, before your classroom, before your team, before the people that you manage, whatever it may be, you need to understand that your family comes first. You have to lead your family before you can lead anybody else. Because what Paul knows that I think we really all know is if things aren't going right at home, things aren't going to go well anywhere else, are they? Have you ever gone to work and you're fighting with your spouse, or you're fighting with your boyfriend or your girlfriend or your kids or whoever it may be, and things are not right at home? It affects you at work, doesn't it? It affects you in the board meeting. It affects you in staff meeting. It affects you in the classroom. It affects you on the field. If things aren't right at home, things aren't going to go right anywhere else. And here's the thing. Before you lead anybody else, these are the people you lead first and foremost. We have to lead our families well. Families have to make sacrifices. Families have to make sacrifices, but we should never sacrifice our families. We have to remember that. It's okay for us as a family to make sacrifices together, to make decisions together of what we're going to do. But do not ever, as a leader, husbands, mothers, parents, do not ever sacrifice your family for anyone else, for the church, for business, for anything. Never sacrifice your family. Make sacrifices together, but never sacrifice your family. The thing that I've learned as a leader who wears many hats and is in charge of many people in many different organizations is I've learned that I have to schedule leading my family. I literally, if you looked at my calendar, I have times blocked off like it's an appointment, like it's coffee with somebody, like it was anything else, like church on Sunday mornings. I have times blocked off in my calendar to be at home with my family, to be at dinner with my family, to take my wife out on a date. I schedule time with my family because if I don't schedule it, I won't do it. If I don't plan it, it won't happen. And we as leaders have to lead our families first, lead our marriages first, because those are gifts from God that cannot be sacrificed. We have to lead our families. And so sometimes that even means we have to be so disciplined that we schedule time for them. There have been times where some of you have said, can we talk? Can we meet? Can we do this? And I've said, I can't. I have an appointment. And what that appointment was getting ice cream with my little girl. Now, to you, that may not seem like an appointment, but to me, it is, because I have to lead my family first. What Paul said is, how can anybody lead anywhere when they don't lead their family? We have to choose to lead them because our families are very, very important to us. Kate and I, we try our best to be good at this, to lead our families. But you know what? Leading our families, it helps us be such better leaders. Because when things are right between us, when things are right at home, we're just able to lead better. When she's at the bank or when I'm at church or CrossFit or HOA, we're able to lead those people because we've started with ourselves first. Every single one of us as leaders have to choose to lead ourselves well. So, in conclusion, to wrap everything up, what must happen? What must every leader do? A leader must lead themselves well in order to lead others. How do we do that? We have to lead our character, lead our temperament, lead our habits, and most importantly, we have to lead our family. When we do that, we are able to be the leaders that God wants us to be. We're able to influence people, not manipulate people, but influence people, which is what's best for what God wants to do through us and in our communities, in our homes, at our places of business. Now, every good leader knows that even when a good leader does all this right, even when a leader leads themselves right, anytime you lead, what is there going to be? Criticism. Critics. All the time. It's almost impossible. And the criticism will always be louder than any sort of praise. You'll always get bad reports more than you do good reports. I mean, even in my context, I get 1 month where I get a little bit of things are going good. It's Pastor Appreciation Month, right? Some of you guys don't even get that, you know? We should have Teacher Appreciation Month, Cop Appreciation Month, Coach Appreciation Month, right? But we always hear criticism much louder than we do praise. And so how do we as leaders deal with criticism? Well, that's exactly what we're going to talk about next week. How does a leader deal with critics? How do we cope with the critics? So I hope you guys come back for part three of our series called Leading Well. If you guys will stand, I'm so glad that you decided to be here today. If you're new here today, please go speak to our welcome team in the cafe. Why don't you say good morning to somebody, tell them they look good today, and I hope you guys have a great week. We'll see you at Trunk or Treat on Saturday night at 4 o'clock.
Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast today. We hope that you can make it to one of our Sunday morning experiences at 211 Boone Street at 10 a.m. Don't forget to check out our website, www.anchoredhope.church. You can also give online very easily and conveniently. We'd love to have your support on our mission to lead people to a growing relationship with Jesus.